You are Locked On Clippers, your daily Los Angeles Clippers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to a new episode of the Locked On Clippers podcast. Today is Friday, February 9th, 2018. I'm your host, Lucas Han. You can find me on Twitter at LucasJHan, as well as read my articles at ClipsNation.com, and follow along on Twitter there at ClipsNationSBN. So in today's episode, the day after the NBA trade deadline in which the Clippers stood pat, we're going to talk about the decision that they made to stand pat and the potential ramifications of that going forward for the rest of the season and into this offseason. And then we'll talk a little bit about the deals that were made around the league, not going too much in depth, but just want to touch on some things that happened. So let's get right into it. Clippers' decision to stand pat. We were hearing some whispers early Thursday morning. The Cavaliers had re-engaged with DeAndre Jordan. The Toronto Raptors kind of emerged late into the DeAndre Jordan hunt. Avery Bradley is a guy who drew some interest from Oklahoma City and San Antonio. And ultimately, the Clippers ended up not making a deal. So the question that everyone has is why. And a lot of Clippers fans I know out there are relieved because maybe not Avery Bradley as much because he's new, but they simply don't want DeAndre Jordan to leave the Clippers, which is understandable for sentimental and practical basketball reasons. A lot of Clippers fans out there are angry because they feel like, well, the Clippers traded Blake Griffin. They're rebuilding. They're getting younger. Why wouldn't they trade two other valuable veterans who have trade value? And I think a big part of this is the assumption of what these guys can get on the trade market based off of years of watching the NBA at the trade deadline and knowing what guys typically go for in early February when teams are, you know, contenders are trying to get players for their playoff run. And we're used to teams like the Clippers in 2016 giving up an expiring contract and a first round pick to get a guy like Jeff Green, who's a marginal, you know, at the time was a marginal upgrade role player. And Avery Bradley is probably, I would say seen around the league as being a better player than Jeff Green. So it makes sense, right? Fans expected to be able to get some sort of salary relief and a first round pick for Avery Bradley. I just don't think that was the case at this deadline. And I think with DeAndre Jordan, it was similar. I don't think the Clippers were going to be able to get really anything of much value for DeAndre Jordan that didn't involve taking back long-term salary. And so, yeah, the Clippers stood pat, which is disappointing. It's always exciting when something happens. But the reality is we can't judge whether they made the right decision or not, because we don't know what the decision was. Unless you think, well, the Clippers should have traded Avery Bradley no matter what. It doesn't matter what the return package was. They should have traded him for anything just to get him off the team. Well, then, okay, they probably had at least some deal that they could have made that they chose not to make. But what ends up happening really is that we don't know what that package is. And the Clippers, for their part, I don't think feel like Avery Bradley had to get off the team no matter what. I think it was just a situation where they see him as kind of extraneous, maybe a little expendable or redundant with what they have, and seemingly possessing trade value, so they shopped him around to see what they could get. They didn't like what they could get, so they held on to him. There were some reports out there of Danny Green and a first-round pick from the Spurs. I've said this kind of every time this rumor has come up. It just doesn't sound realistic to me. It doesn't sound like a thing the Spurs would do. And if they would have done it, it would have been great for the Clippers. It would have put them in the luxury tax, which I know they don't want to do. But it just doesn't seem likely to me that it's a thing that the Spurs should do. So, yeah, I mean, that's kind of where I am on it, is that the Clippers, you know, there's a lot of judgment out there. Oh, they should have made a move. But I think no move is better than a bad move, although we learn every trade deadline that, and every draft day, every time there's a chance for a team to make a trade and they don't make it, we learn that fans would rather make a bad move than no move at all, because fans just want kind of some sort of excitement. And then if it's a bad trade, they'll complain about it down the line. But the front office is more concerned with doing the smart thing at all times than the exciting thing. The question, didn't the Clippers have to let Bradley go yesterday even for a second round pick? Who knows what the offer, like if there was an offer out there that was an expiring contract and a second-round pick for Avery Bradley, maybe, but I'm not sure. The Clippers have a lot of picks going forward. They have two first-round draft picks this year. They have 2 second-round draft picks in 2019, 2 second-round draft picks in 2020. I don't know that adding another second-round pick really helps them, especially if it's a team like Oklahoma City or San Antonio. Like, if you trade Avery Bradley to Oklahoma City right now for their 2018 second-round draft pick, what's that pick going to be, 52, 53? That's not an NBA player, and if it is, if there's someone you really like at 52 or 53, you can always buy a pick down there for cash. So you're basically trading for nothing. And with Oklahoma City, the case was they didn't have any expiring salaries. The same goes for San Antonio, no expiring salaries. So you're taking on money for next season, potentially beyond next season, and you're getting, what, a marginal asset, the 53rd pick? Honestly, at that point, I don't see why it's not better to just keep 30 games of Avery Bradley, even if you know you're not going to pay him this summer, and let him walk in free agency. Isn't 30 games of him trying to help you win some games and take your playoff push? And then who knows what happens in free agency? That's better than the 52nd pick, I think. And yeah, you know, ultimately, I wouldn't project that Avery Bradley stays with the Clippers through free agency this summer, just because it seems like he wants a lot of money. But as Jerry West said last night, and as I've said over and over again, there's not a lot of money in the free agency market. Jerry West said last night, quote, these players aren't going to get paid. And so if Avery Bradley goes out there and, you know, on day one he tells the Clippers, okay, I want $18 million a year, and the Clippers say, no, and Avery Bradley goes, okay, I'm going to take other meetings, and the Clippers say, okay, and he goes and takes other meetings and comes back and says, no one's offering me more than the mid-level exception, then maybe Avery Bradley and the Clippers could have a reasonable talk about a contract to sign for going forward. And that might be actually something the Clippers could parlay into a lot of trade value down the line, because Avery Bradley, as I said, is a guy who's seen kind of in high regards around the league. So if he goes out there and doesn't get a contract offer above the mid-level exception, not saying that that will happen, but it's certainly a possibility, then he could come back to the Clippers and sign for, you know, $10 million a year, $12 million a year, something in that range. Again, that's another very tradable contract going forward, just like this Lou Williams extension that they just signed is a tradable contract going forward. DeAndre is a little bit of a weirder situation because it's difficult for me to see who's going to pay him this summer. Not a lot of teams have cap space. Those that do are bad teams that aren't going to want a 30-year-old center. A team like the Lakers that's, you know, rebuilding and looking for superstars, not, again, not looking for DeAndre. A team like the Mavericks that I think the Mavericks are kind of done talking to DeAndre Jordan in free agency. So who pays DeAndre? Does a sign-and-trade get done? Because even then the Clippers are recouping value and they can talk about trying to get a better package than they were offered at this trade deadline, which included things like Tristan Thompson's horrible contract. But so, yeah, I'm not convinced by the chatter that standing pat was a bad move for the Clippers. I think I'm not certain that it was a good move. I mean, I don't know. It could come out in the next few days, or it could never come out, but be true that there was some offer on the table that I, Lucas Hand, certainly would have jumped on and taken if I were running the Clippers, but the Clippers front office didn't like. And, you know, that's certainly a possibility, but the reality is, as long as we don't know what the offers were on the table, I don't think we can really criticize. And so someone asked me, how is this different from Tyreek Evans not being traded from Memphis, which I said on Twitter is like a fucking embarrassment for Memphis's front office, was, I believe, the exact wording of my tweet. Well, here's why. Because first of all, Tyreek Evans on Memphis is making $3 million this season. Memphis does not have his bird rights. They do not have cap space this summer. They will not be able to re-sign him and keep him. The only thing they can do is offer him the mid-level exception, and Tyreek Evans is going to get offered the mid-level exception from very good teams. He's not going to stay with the Memphis Grizzlies. Even Memphis people that I talk to think that he's not going to stay with the Memphis Grizzlies. So they wanted to move him at this trade deadline and try to get some value. No one was willing to give them a first-round pick. As I talked about in recent podcasts, no one really is giving up first-round picks right now. They're incredibly overvalued. People are holding on to them for more precious. They're treating them more preciously than they actually are, which is the opposite, kind of a whiplash reaction to recent years when teams kind of threw them away like candy and then came to regret it, and now they're holding on to them too much. But they tried to get a first-round pick for Tyreek Evans. No one would offer it. They were offered several teams were offering them 2 second-round picks, and they said, no, we're holding out for a first-round pick. And they held out right until 3 p.m., and the deadline hit, and they kept Tyreek Evans. Here's the problem. All of the marginal gains that you get from 30 games of Avery Bradley, the Grizzlies don't get from 30 games of Tyreek Evans. The Grizzlies are a lottery team. They're way out of the playoff race. They don't have, like, the Clippers right now have, like, I think, according to ESPN, like a 50% chance of making the playoffs. The Grizzlies are out of it. They're done. Tyreke Evans, all he does is he wins them a couple extra games and makes their draft pick worse. And then they don't get those extra second-round selections, which are still worth something if you can get two picks in the 40s or if you can trade with a contender that has a bad team's future second-round pick that's going to be a little bit higher, then you could potentially recoup some value for Tyreke Evans. And the Grizzlies overplayed their hand so much. They committed themselves to trading Tyreke Evans by a week ago, sending him away from the team and saying, hey, Tyreke, just so you know, we're going to trade you. The trade deadline is coming up, so we're going to shut you down. You're not going to be playing in any games or practices. And then once we figure out where you're going, we'll let you know. And then they didn't end up trading him, and now he has to come rejoin the team. It's like a total gaffe, an embarrassment. I don't think the Clippers not trading Avery Bradley even rivals that. I mean, Avery Bradley came in a week ago, and the Clippers immediately demonstrated that they thought he was valuable to them. They started him in two games. Lawrence Frank was on ESPN radio this weekend saying, yeah, we'd actually really like to keep Avery, but of course we have an obligation to answer the phone and see what teams are offering. So in that respect, no, I don't think that the Avery Bradley and Tyreke Evans situations are alike at all. I think there's a pretty notable difference between the Clippers kind of making this, kind of playing in the middle, waiting to see what they got. They knew what the gains of keeping Bradley were. They didn't get any trade offers that they felt like outweighed those gains, so they decided to hold on to him. Whereas Memphis, literally keeping Tyreke Evans is a bad thing. The only thing it does for them is make their draft pick worse. And trading him for nothing at least would have made their draft pick a little better because they would have lost a little extra games. So literally giving him away is better than the status quo, and instead they stuck with the status quo because they took a hard line in negotiation. So that I think that's why it's embarrassing. They set themselves up for failure. Teams called their bluff, and now they're going to end up really hurting because of it. So now, you know, moving on from this, I want to talk a little bit about, aside from Tyreke Evans, the other trades that went down in the NBA on deadline day. But first, I want to remind you guys again, as I do all the time, Locked On Clippers is part of the Locked On Podcast Network. So we have podcasts for all of these teams. So if you hear deals in the next part that intrigue you and you want to hear a little more about, make sure you check out the Locked On Podcast for those teams. So let's just quickly run through some of these other trades that were made on deadline day in the NBA. The big news, what you kind of have to start with, is the Cleveland Cavaliers redid their whole roster. They traded like 87 players. They redid everything. So what they basically did is, Cleveland's a team that's had a lot of trouble recently. I've been ragging on them a lot. Everyone's been ragging on them a lot. They've been letting up like 140 points a game. They aren't playing any defense. The locker room is in shambles. Kevin Love was sick and like missed the game with the flu. And then Isaiah Thomas reportedly called him out and said, I don't think you were really sick. And that was the cause of some tension. And then Kevin Love broke his hand. And then the Cavaliers blew a big lead against Orlando. And then Isaiah Thomas said that the Cavs coaches weren't good at making in-game adjustments. And Isaiah Thomas called out his teammates for not playing defense as well as Isaiah's teammates in Boston last year did. And Isaiah Thomas is gone now. Because, shockingly, when a guy comes in from a team that the Cavaliers beat in the playoffs last season and misses most of the season with an injury, which is not his fault, and then immediately comes back, starts taking a ton of bad shots, reacts negatively when questioned about his shot selection, blames everyone else for the team's problems, causes locker room issues, doesn't play defense, blames everyone else for not playing defense, calls out the coaches in the press, calls out his teammates in locker room meetings. Shockingly, no one wanted him around, and he's gone now. He's a Los Angeles Laker. Channing Frye, also gone to the Lakers, his expiring contract. They were able to get out from under Iman Shumpert's contract. Of course, they had to take back George Hill's worst contract, but George Hill is a better player than Iman Shumpert, so that's a win. They sent Dwayne Wade back to Miami. Basically, they felt like Wade wasn't going to get much playing time with all the new acquisitions that the Cavaliers made, and obviously Miami was Dwayne Wade's NBA home, so they let him go back there. They got rid of Jay Crowder, who's been underwhelming for them, but Jay Crowder's probably the second most significant player in this trade coming from Cleveland other than Isaiah Thomas. And they got rid of Derrick Rose, who hasn't even been with the team for a while. And then additionally, Cleveland's own 2018 first-round pick, so not the Brooklyn pick, but Cleveland's own pick, which is going to be somewhere in the 20s, going to the Lakers. And they get George Hill, Rodney Hood, Jordan Clarkson, Larry Nance Jr., four guys who are going to be big rotation pieces for them. Larry Nance Jr. Probably mitigated a little bit once Kevin Love comes back from his injury at the power forward spot, but a young, athletic, bouncy guy who can be a part of their plans going forward into the future, especially if LeBron leaves and they decide to trade Kevin Love for whatever pieces they can get. Larry Nance is like, I think he's like 22 years old, becomes their power forward. Rodney Hood is a good wing scorer, can play the two and the three. Some consistency issues there, some questions about what he's going to get paid this summer. Utah was kind of ready to move on from him, but he's a guy who can come in and play and have an impact and score the basketball. George Hill, two-way savvy veteran guard, a guy who I've wanted the Clippers to target for quite a while. I think will steady the ship for them at the point guard position. He's not going to do anything fantastic, but he'll bring the ball up, he'll run the offense, he'll hit shots, and he'll defend both guard positions. And Jordan Clarkson, kind of the downfall of the deal is that they had to eat Jordan Clarkson's contract, which is kind of expensive for the next couple of seasons. But again, he's just another offensively capable combo guard. They bring in a guy who can play. And Cleveland, even though they had a collection of guys on their roster who can play a little bit, the team wasn't playing. And because the team, and I know like, oh, the team wasn't playing is like a weird phrase, but what I mean is like they were out there playing basketball, of course, but they weren't engaging with what the system was doing. They weren't being creative. They weren't being their selves. It was very stale. It was very low energy. They weren't really out there playing, you know? And these guys are guys who just getting fresh faces in, younger guys who can come in and play. And I think it's a chance to kind of revitalize the whole team when you send out six guys and bring back four guys. You know, probably a smart thing to do when you consider all of the problems that they've been having with their roster recently. It doesn't guarantee success because we have no idea how these new guys will fit together with such a short amount of time to adjust. We have no idea if maybe some of them play badly in the system or anything that can happen, and it doesn't even fill all of Cleveland's holes. But I think it's probably, I think their odds of success get better with this deal just because their odds of success were zero, and this is like they put everything in a bag and shook it up. And now we'll see, you know, we'll see how things settle. But they were nowhere before, and now they could potentially at least be going somewhere this season. From some of the other perspectives here, the Lakers get basically, you know, this is a solid trade for them, I think. I think probably overall their part with the Cavaliers, they win, because the Lakers get out of Jordan Clarkson's contract, which helps them in their quest to play the free agency lottery every year, which is, you know, one of their franchise goals. They get a late round, they get a late first round pick. They have to give up on Larry Nance, which hurts for them to keep on giving up on promising young players to move bad contracts. It's like their front office drafts well, but free agents horribly, and then has to trade the good young players that they drafted to get rid of the horrendous free agency contracts that they signed. So like they drafted Jordan Clarkson, he was a good young player, they overpaid him. And then they drafted Larry Nance, who's a good young player, and then they had to trade Larry Nance, a good young player, to get rid of Jordan Clarkson. Same thing goes with D'Angelo Russell and Timofey Mozgov, and it's something that is bad when it happens once and is horrendous when it starts to become a pattern, especially for a team that isn't signing free agents, has not been successful in luring free agents, and is now trading these young, exciting pieces to dump contracts to try to get back to free agency. I think you probably have a better chance of reaching long-term success if you do something like what Brooklyn is doing, where they're eating those long-term contracts. They're saying, okay, we'll take Timofey Mozgov. We don't care about the cap space. Give us the free D'Angelo Russell and let us get these young players to build around. So, you know, I think it's a questionable strategy for the Lakers, but it's good. This trade was good execution of that strategy. And I think Nance is maybe a little more expendable just because of the emergence of Kyle Kuzma. You know, Kuzma's not a perfect player, but I think he's definitely a more compelling power forward prospect than Larry Nance. Miami gets Dwayne Wade for basically nothing, so it's like a sentimental move. That's great. Utah gets Jay Crowder for Rodney Hood. Rodney Hood was a guy who was basically done in Utah. They didn't have a lot of, they weren't keeping him. They weren't going to use him very much. Jay Crowder is, you know, I would have said 6 months ago, I would have said Jay Crowder had the best contract in the NBA at like $7 million a year for two more years after this season for a guy who can hit shots and defend the 2-3-4 positions. He's been bad in Cleveland. But like I said, Cleveland wasn't playing. Everyone's been bad in Cleveland. So he's a guy who, actually talking with some Cleveland people ahead of the trade deadline, I would have been interested if there was a deal between the Clippers and the Cavaliers, and the Clippers trying to take a flyer on Jay Crowder. His contract, while it's long, two more seasons after this one, is cheap enough that if he really is dead on arrival, basically, it doesn't hurt you to take him on. And the upside of him being a player on that contract, I think, is pretty strong. So that's an interesting pickup for Utah. I like it. So just on to some other trades. Three-team trade between Dallas, Denver, and New York. Dallas sends Devin Harris to Denver because Denver needs a veteran point guard for their playoff run. Denver sends Emmanuel Mudiay to New York because New York just need, I mean, who knows what the Knicks need. The Knicks are the Knicks. But they're playing Jarrett Jack at point guard right now, and Mudiay at least is significantly younger than Jarrett Jack, but they're still not going to be playing Frank Ntilikina enough, which doesn't make sense because he's their first-round rookie, but okay. The Knicks send Doug McDermott to Dallas. Dallas gets a shooter. They wanted a shooter. So, you know, I think it's a minor move. It makes sense for every team. Denver, you know, they sold a little bit of the future to get the guy they needed now, which is Devin Harris. They needed a veteran point guard, but if you don't believe in Mudiay anymore, then it's basically no cost. The problem is they picked Mudiay with a 7th overall pick a few years ago, so that means that you're basically admitting that you wasted the 7th overall pick, which isn't great, but in a world where you shoot and you miss, it's better to admit you missed and recoup some value. The Suns trade a 2nd-round pick to Orlando for Elfrid Payton. Elfrid Payton, valuable young player, best season of his career, finally learned how to shoot. He's shooting like 38% from three, which is really up for him. He's the young point guard from Orlando with the like weird hair that hangs over his forehead that you've probably seen like memes of. It's really, really good value. Elfrid Payton's entering restricted free agency, which, you know, is tricky because that could potentially be a big contract if teams think that he's emerged as a starting caliber point guard, or he could not get any interest because of restricted free agency. We'll talk a little bit more about restricted free agency, talking about Montrezl Harrell sometime in the future, but we'll get into that. A lot of minor moves made. Noah Vonleh dumped from Portland for some salary cap. Sheldon Mack dumped from Washington for some luxury tax savings. Dante Cunningham dumped from New Orleans for some luxury tax savings. And Detroit Pistons made a couple interesting moves. They traded two future 2nd-round picks and Willie Reed and Bryce Johnson. I think it was Willie Reed and one of the 2nd-round picks to Chicago for Jameer Nelson, Bryce Johnson and the other 2nd-round pick to Memphis for James Ennis. So they basically get, with Brandon Knight injured, or excuse me, Brandon Knight is the one who's in Phoenix, Reggie Jackson is the one in Detroit. Those guys are the same in my mind. With Reggie Jackson still injured, and then even when he comes back, Jameer Nelson is a solid veteran point guard, reunites with Stan Van Gundy, helps run their offense, and James Ennis is a decent wing player, can shoot the three. They basically add two role players, two backup guys, perimeter players who are going to be in their playoff rotation that can help them make this playoff push, can help their overall rotation be a little more solid. So overall, I think it's a good deal for them. I think I missed a couple minor deals. That's not everything that went down, but anything that I didn't talk about yet is really so minor. Oh, I think Bruno Caboclo for Malachi Richardson, Toronto and Sacramento. I don't even know what to say about either of those two guys. But yeah, I mean, aside from the Cavaliers blowing everything up, it really was the quiet trade deadline that we anticipated. Obviously, Cleveland made a lot of noise, which exists and was there, and we can't just ignore it. But aside from that, a lot of minor cap dumping moves. It wasn't like three or four or five teams made moderate trades. It was like one team revamped their whole roster and a handful of teams made minor trades to get another backup or, you know, dump some salary or whatever. And most of the league stood pat, including the Clippers. So it was a mild trade deadline because of the contracts that are out there, because first-round picks are being so overvalued right now. But it'll be interesting to see, now that teams held on to their picks, what could potentially happen on draft day when that pick, you know, now all of a sudden if you're a team like San Antonio, you're sitting there, maybe not San Antonio because they draft so well, but these teams will be sitting there and it's their turn to pick. And all of a sudden they realize, man, we didn't trade this pick in February because we're so scared of moving it, and now we're here and we don't want any of these players. Who can we trade it for now? So it could make for an interesting draft day, just, you know, hypothetically going forward in a few months. But For now, that's going to do it for today's episode of the Locked On Clippers podcast. Tonight, big game. Clippers visit the Pistons, their first game against Blake Griffin. And Austin Rivers could be back, so we'll be seeing. After Chris Paul's departure last summer, the other two members of the Clippers' old big three, Blake Griffin and Austin Rivers, in a grudge match. Not really. It would be Blake Griffin versus DeAndre Jordan. And I think they like each other. They should like each other, so there shouldn't be a lot of tension there. But Austin Rivers will really be coming back, and maybe Austin Rivers and Blake Griffin didn't get along. That's a little more plausible to me, so could be a little interesting to watch. But, yeah, I mean, the Clippers have not lost since they got their new players in from the Blake Griffin trade. The Detroit Pistons have not lost since the Blake Griffin trade. So one of the, you know, something's got to give. So it's going to be a little interesting to see these two teams go head-to-head. And that's that. We'll talk about it a little more after it happens. Thank you guys for listening. As always, if you have any comments, questions, or feedback, you can hit me up on Twitter at LucasJHan. You can email me lhan.clipsnation@gmail.com. This is Lucas Han signing off for Locked On Clippers.